Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like,
you could just see
600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing, and I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking, And Mess Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash, This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining.
Okay, all right. Today's podcast is titled "The E-commerce Goose That Lays the Golden Eggs." The e-commerce goose that lays the golden egg. And for those who are not familiar with the Aesop fable, my laptop slipped. The Aesop fable, which is known as the goose that laid the golden egg, or eggs, and I shall read a version of it right now just as a backstory. Anyway, the goose that laid the golden eggs, once again, this is the Aesop fable. It starts off, a farmer lived with 8 cows and 4 geese on a small farm on the outskirts of town. And this fable drops a lot of good references. Anyway, every morning, hold on, make sure I got my mic open. Yeah. Every morning, the farmer had the same routine. First, he went to the cow shed to milk the cows. Once he had placed a large milking bucket under the first cow, he would begin to milk gently. After a few practice moves, the bucket would be filled. He would repeat for each of his cows, and they would thank him with a loud moo. Next, he went to the goose shed. Very important clue there. Next, he went to the goose shed and collect their eggs. He carefully placed them one by one in a small basket and patted the geese lovingly. Every Wednesday and Saturday, the farmer took the milk and eggs to the small market square in the center of town where many farmers offered their goods for sale. The farmer led a happy life. He had everything he needed. One morning, he went to the goose house with his little basket to collect the egg, and he was startled to find a very different looking egg. It flashed in the nest of the largest and most significant goose, a magnificent goose. It was not white and dull like the other eggs, but a radiant gold. The farmer euphorically grabbed the egg, the golden egg, and ran to his living room where he examined it in detail. The entire egg was made of pure gold. Overjoyed, the farmer took the egg to the marketplace and presented it to the local jewelry dealer. "You've got a particularly valuable treasure," said the merchant. "I'll pay you a good price if you sell me the egg." The farmer agreed and returned to his farm with a pocket full of money. The next morning, he could hardly believe his luck when another golden egg lay in the nest of the largest and most magnificent goose. Again, he sold it for a small fortune in the town's marketplace. This went on day after day, and the farmer quickly became wealthy. But it wasn't long until the farmer became impatient. He wondered why the goose couldn't lay 2 or 3 golden eggs a day. That would make him even richer faster. Then he thought, if the big, beautiful goose lays a golden egg every morning, there must be, which is the goose, is made up entirely gold, pure gold herself. Why should I wait on a small golden egg each day when I can have one big goose made of pure gold? The farmer rushed into the goose house and slaughtered the large, magnificent goose. But what he saw shook him to the core. The goose was not made of pure gold, but of ordinary goose meat like any other goose. In no time at all, the farmer had lost his lost both of his both of his large, magnificent geese, and the golden egg that it produced every morning. Now, what's the moral of the story, for those of you who don't know? The story of the greedy farmer illustrates the negative consequences of greed. Instead of waiting for a golden egg each morning, the farmer wanted more. He lost sight of the his comfortable life and demanded ever greater and even faster wealth. As a result, he became so blind to the actions that he eventually destroyed the source of his own happiness. Everybody has a goose. Now, a goose, as I'm defining it, is something that can make you money, something that's of value. You might not recognize it at the present time. It doesn't. For the sake of this podcast today, and once again, we've talked this podcast, the e-commerce goose that lays the golden egg. The e-commerce goose, I would say, would be 50% of the formula that you need that will help you produce, or that will produce, a golden egg or many golden eggs for you. And I've named these the last couple of days. eBay, I consider a gold goose. Facebook Marketplace, Etsy, YouTube, Craigslist. These are all platforms that can help you, or what I consider golden goose, or they're geese, because there's more than one. But you only need one to get started. Now, the other half of the goose that's going to lay these eggs via social media, it can be anything that you feel comfortable selling or marketing. Cupcakes, toilet paper, model planes, trains, used automobiles, new automobiles, tiny houses, sheds, shoes, clothes, bicycle, anything you can think of. And let's say you have a bicycle, and it might be a collector's item bicycle, or you just want to get rid of it. You know, you can put it up on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. Those are two e-commerce platforms, and get rid of it. And the money you receive would be your gold egg. However, you can take that same, if you can keep on finding bikes that you can put online, used clothes that you can resell online in an e-commerce platform, you can produce something on a daily basis. So we're currently working on an e-book here. And here are the procedures that we're going to go through, including if you want to join us, because we're organizing our own geeks, starting off with one goose, where we'll be making money on a, it'll probably start off weekly basis, and then it'll get down to daily. But in any event, we're working on something, ebook where, it concentrates on one problem. We give you one goose, and that one goose will lay one golden egg a day. So we'll have all that laid out for you on Monday. And that's our e-commerce goose. And e-commerce, now, you can also develop your own flock of geese, because if you got one goose that lays one gold egg a day, all right, you can also have several geese that lay one egg a day, you know. So, but the key is this, the farmer who killed his goose, he never thought, you know what, if I don't sell a gold egg, All right, because that's one of the lessons I got from it, the goose that laid the golden egg. He sold those gold eggs as soon as he got them, which was one a day. However, had he kept, let's say, every other day, he would keep one of those gold eggs and then have them hatch. And those gold, those geese that hatch from those gold eggs, they're more than likely they would produce more gold eggs themselves. So you can do that with e-commerce as well. So there's a lot there in the story, the Aesop fable of the goose that laid the golden egg. And I'll just briefly run through it again. And just some of the nuggets that popped up to me. And it, once again, it says, a farmer lived with 8 cows, 4 geese, and 4 geese on a small farm on the outskirts of town. Now, what I get from the first sentence of this fable is this. Number one, he didn't depend on one source of income. He had 4 cows. That's 4 sources of revenue right there. And he had 4 geese. So that means he had 8 sources of revenue. And it's all on the farm. Some would say he grew vegetables. So this guy probably had about 9 or 10. Well, let's go by the strict numbers. 4 and 4 is 8 plus the farm is 9. So he had at least 9 sources of revenue. So if it's good enough for him, it should be good enough for you and me. Next thing is, on a small farm on the outskirts of town, he didn't have this downtown. It was on the outskirts of town. Translated in our modern Western living, you know, if you go to the outskirts of town, to like small rural areas, there's less rules and regulations, and you can pretty much have more freedom to be, well, just more freedom all the way around, economically and everywhere else that you can imagine. All right. Now, every morning, the next sentence, every morning, the farmer had the same routine, all right, which, because when he went out to milk the cow, basically he was milking for money. When he went out to check on the geese laying eggs, okay, because he wasn't eating all that stuff, you know, he was getting inventory to sell. So he was organizing his money to start the day off. Let's see. That's the second sentence. And, of course, as he organized his milk and his eggs, he would go to, and this is how the Amish men work, Amish and a Mennonite to a high degree operate today. They do the same thing. So Aesop's fable is, how old is Aesop's fable? Let me look it up. How, because it goes way back. Aesop, they say, was a former Greek slave. And it was, goes back to 6th century B.C. That's a long time ago, people. That's a long time ago. So farming, which is very fundamental. I mean, it has stood the test of time. All right, but it goes back. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, no, it goes back to the 10th to the 16th century B.C. All right, Aesop's fable. But Aesop was formerly a Greek slave, according to what I'm reading here online. All right. Anyway, but we'll be doing eBay auctions Now, there are other platforms that we'll be using, but eBay auctions, because eBay, you can, like I say, it for those of you who haven't done eBay, I'm sure there's some that who have done eBay. Like I say, you can that I consider that if you do it on a consistent basis, it's going to lay some golden eggs for you. Okay, let's see. What else do we have here? This week went kind of fast. All right, well, we'll be right back.
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds.
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. Okay. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blondon, how much cash did you have?
I don't know. I had a few hundred thousand.
A few hundred thousand. So you weren't a millionaire back.
How'd it go? We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
We'll be out, man. I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right. Relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
He a man today. He a man.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did. But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see the trains passing as you're driving.
That is true.
Down the superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands. We'll be right back.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs, penned in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play, he worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As I know here, you're in trouble. Where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day. And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out in the fields each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory. And that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. and way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it, and I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand, little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail? I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen, but God says, write what I tell you to write. Paul Rope, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, as laid up for you, what's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross? I've got two nails in my hand. Father, I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdraw thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, split history in half, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win, because he's on your side and one with God, always in the majority. So walk with him, and talk with him, and work with him, and stick together, and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night, and God bless you.
So when people try to figure out how to make $1 million, they have no idea how daunting that is. Because if you know how to make $1 million, you're going to make it tomorrow. But since you can't figure out how to $1 million idea, you go somewhere and sit down. That's the wrong approach. If you apply your gift, your God-given gift that he gave you, you have millions already at your disposal. If you break it down inch by inch into things of sense, or the 10 by 10 theory, which is very simple. You don't need $1 million idea. You need a $10 idea. You need something that you do, your gift that God gave you, to make $10. That's all you got to be able to know. I don't care if it's cutting hair, cutting somebody's grass, washing somebody's car. I don't care if it's mowing somebody's lawn. I don't care if it's driving people to their destinations. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's baking cookies or pie. You have some braiding somebody's hair. You have something that you can do so well that someone will give you $10 for it. Write my paper for me. Do this for me. Somebody give you $10 for it. Once they give you $10, all you got to do is whatever you did to get that 10, do it 10 more times. You now, my friend, have $100. You have $100 simply because you took a $10 idea and you did it 10 times. Well, guess what? If you take that $100 that you made since you've done it 10 times and you do it 10 more times, I got news for you, my friend. You now have $1,000. $1,000, you make $1,000, guess what all you got to do? You got to multiply that effort again. Do whatever you did to do $1,000, do it 10 more times. My friend, you now have $10,000. You got $10,000 now. Imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. Just imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. That's $120,000 a year. But I got news for you, my friend. Whatever you did, whatever it took to make yourself $10,000, all you got to do is do it 10 more times. 10 more times, my friend, you now have
$100,000. I got news for you now. If you can make $100,000, you're just a step away from being a millionaire, man. Because now you hire a few more people to help you out, that you can do portions of what you do, so you can duplicate that effort. And one more time, just one more time, do it 10 times. Man, that sounds hard. It is hard. But what else you got to do? What, you going to stop at the 100,000? All you got to do is duplicate your efforts by 10. You duplicate your efforts by 10 times 100,000. Welcome to the club, my friends. You are now a millionaire. Congratulations. You became a millionaire with a $10 idea. So stop trying to, stop bogging yourself down trying to figure out how to make a million. Do what you can do to make $10. And then do the 10 by 10 theory. Inch by inch, anything's a cinch. Now here's the joyful part. Along the way, when you was down here making $20,000, but you did right here, and all of a sudden you're making $30,000. Now you're making $100,000. But on the way to duplicating that times 10, you may stop along in here at $250,000. You can make it $250,000 a year. That's way better than that $20,000 you had when you started. So there's joy in the process. Your life is actually a lot richer at $250,000. It'll become even more richer at $500,000. It becomes even richer than that at $750,000, $750,000. If you don't get to the million, man, you're going to trip because you're making $900,000 a year? No, you're going to be happy. What, you don't make the million, so you only make $700,000 a year? You can't find happiness in $7,000? Something wrong with you, man. There's joy in the process. That's how you make $1,000,000.
I'd have had some things happen to me, man. President Obama's transition team. I was getting off a plane one day. Assistant called and said, Steve, it's President Obama's transition team. President Obama and I were friends. I've interviewed him. He's been on my talk show. I've been to the White House and interviewed him. He's been on my radio show more than anybody's show. I go to their parties. We friends. So his transition team called me around the 9th of January and said, Steve, the president feels like it's important that we sit down and have a conversation with this new administration to see if there's something we can work out. Not President Obama, just his transition team from White House. I said, okay, cool. Next thing I know, the Trump administration transition team gets in touch with the Obama transition team. My name come up. So on January 13th, they asked me to come to Trump Tower to meet with Donald Trump. Now, the hell I caught. The sheer misery for making that decision. I've been so many coons, Uncle Tom, sellouts. I was stunned. I mean, the brutality of what happened to me on social media behind visiting that man in Trump Tower, it was alarming. But I'm sitting up in here and I'm trying to figure out, because you don't know, so since you don't know, here come the hate. Uncle Tom, sellout, coon, Steve Harvey, shoe shining, celebrity friends I thought I was really cool with, coming out, talking about, he ought to know better, what the hell wrong with him? Whoa. If President Obama, the current president, and the incoming president say they want to talk to you, which one of you ain't going up there? Just raise your hand if you wouldn't go, so I can see how stupid you are. Just go ahead. I just want to see. This is what I be really wanting to say. See, I can't say none of this in front of another group, but since it's us in here, oh, I've been wanting to say this since January 13th. You better believe this right here. I've been waiting on the right crowd. Well, I'm in front of a bunch of friends right now.
So see, I can say this because I'm around a bunch of friends. You understand? Friendship is essential to the soul. You can live without your father. You can live without a relative. You can make it without your mama. You can't live in this world without a friend. Friendship is essential to the soul. Oh, Philly, my Philly, I super. That friendship is essential to the soul. Yeah, I've been waiting on this. I'm glad Ricky Lewis asked me to come. So, I go up there. President Trump did not know why I was there, but he was accommodating. I'm going to give the man this. The man was very congenial. As we said that, we talked about golf. I played golf at his golf courses a lot. I don't play well, but I play. We talked about that. He's really congenial. And we're sitting there, and he thought that since we shared a common friend, Mark Burnett produced Apprentice, and Mark Burnett produces my new show, Steve Harvey's Thunderdome, that I was there to talk about possibly doing some type of program. I said, no, sir, I'm not. So it got around to it after 25 minutes of talking. He said, so Steve, what can I do for you? Now I had thought of what I would say when I got up there. So I said, well, there's really nothing I want you to do for me. I said, I want to do something for you. And he said, President Trump said, you want to help me? I said, yeah. I said, you've appointed Dr. Ben Carson the head of HUD, and I would like to help him because I don't think he has the celebrity or the name notoriety to get to these inner cities. I've been in inner cities my whole life. I got the key to 32 cities. I've been a stand-up a long time. I said, I can help him with some of these urban situations because I'm from there, and I want to do something to help him. He said, so what do you want to do? I said, well, I have a mentoring program, but my mentoring program is restrictive because I can only do about 1,000 boys, and I can do them only one time a year in each city. I want to create vision centers around the country where I can take these schools that you're closing in the inner cities, take HUD funds, put it with them, and then go in and refurbish these schools and buildings and turn them into a place where boys and girls can come and learn life skills, and parents can come and learn financial skills, literacy skills, to make it. And then eventually, I would like to build vision homes around it to help support these communities so we have wonderful communities. I want people who are less fortunate to have a better way of life. He said, I like that. Let me get Ben Carson on the phone right now. I kid you not, in 2 minutes, he had Ben Carson on the phone. He put Ben Carson on the phone, and he and I started talking, and I introduced the concept to him of Vision Homes right there in the office. He said it's a done deal. Since then, the problem I had was, after the meeting was over, I was supposed to go downstairs by myself and go on over to the rope and address the media. President Trump said, Steve, I'm going to go down with you. All right. We get off the elevator. We walk up to the rope. All the cameras is on. And first thing he said, what we're going to do first thing in this office is replace and repeal Obamacare. I'm standing there. I went, look at the tape. Go back and look at the tape and look at Steve's face. Because I'm going, that ain't shit we said upstairs. I'm sorry. I mean, that's not what we said upstairs. But I was staring, and I'm sitting here going like I'm supporting this here. I ain't said nothing like that. So then when he walked off, I was standing there with Greg Calhoun, another frat brother, and Gerald Washington, a new... Oh, Crump, what's up, man? That's my man right there. You a bad boy. Man, that's my man right there. I'm sorry. I'm a fan of his. Benjamin Crump, attorney. So I'm sitting here, and I walk up to the media, and I go, I'm just messed up because, man, it just looked like... And then next thing you know, all over social media, Steve supports Trump, repeal and replace Obamacare. I ain't know, we ain't never even talked about Obamacare. But that's what God said. And then after that, y'all did your boy. Oh, it wasn't white folk, it was y'all. Yeah, this is you. Now this wasn't a black, this was an internal. White folk don't even know what Uncle Tom Coon is. Y'all was doing this here. Oh, you was doing your boy. To hell with my track record. Damn what I done in the past. You ain't sugar honey iced tea right now. I cleaned that up. See how I did that? I didn't want to, though. I wanted to go ahead and fire another one off, but I figured I had got too many in. You ain't sugar honey iced tea no more. Ooh, I don't like saying that. Black people took to social media, and boy, all my family had to close their accounts down because y'all was just lacing me. Not y'all per se. Most of y'all don't even, hardly any of you blog, but I'm just talking about us. And this was because I don't know why we love destroying each other. I don't know why we take such pleasure in when he gone. You know, I was talking to Kevin Hart the other day when he went through that whole thing about the girl. Kevin Hart said, man, it's amazing how they cheer for you on the way up because they love a success story. But then once you get there, their whole mission is to bring you down. And they was just on that social media just lacing me, man. Like, I don't do nothing for black folks. Like, I just ain't been black this whole time. The hell you gonna call me an Uncle Tom, a coon, and a sellout? I'm 60 years old. You know what I done seen? I seen what everybody in this room that's 60 done seen. I done felt what everybody in this room done felt. How they gonna call you Uncle Tom and the coon? Because you're at the top of the corporate ladder. Now some black person ain't got nothing. Wanna sit up and call you an Uncle Tom and a coon? Because you done bettered yourself. Ain't that about la-di-da? You be wanting to go, man, I wish, you know, man, you be wanting to say something. But you know what, though? You can't say nothing. Because my grandmama taught me something a long time ago. If you hang a sheet out on the line and you get some doo-doo on it, don't wipe it because you ain't going to do nothing but smear it. She say, just wait till it dries. It'll fall right off. So when they kept on trying to, I just shut my mouth. I stayed quiet because I knew I had a purpose. Now, Brother Blue went with me to the first meeting with Dr. Ben Carson at HUD. We have started an initiative. The first one will open in Detroit because that's where Dr. Ben Carson is from. The Vision Centers have been okayed by the White House all because I took a step and went up there and said it. I didn't even come up with the Vision Center concept till the night before. I just told God, I asked God, man, just tell me what to say when I get up there. Because what I'm supposed to say? I don't even know what to say. What do I say to Donald Trump? I told him when we were sitting there. I said, look, man, I ain't vote for you. And I say, I put my whole radio show behind trying not to get you elected. I said, but there was a mistake got made. I said, we was playing checkers and y'all was playing chess. So congratulations on your win. He ain't my president. Well, he the president of the United States. Well, he's not my president. He's the president of the United States. He's not my president. When you get through saying that, he the president. And if you don't sit at the table and talk, you have no say-so on what they serve on the menu. So if you don't like what you eating, it's because you ain't at the table picking and choosing. We as black people got to get at the table. This ain't the white man's game. This is the game. Money is not white man's money. It's money. You get around real rich people. They don't care what color you are. As long as you got enough to be there, Trust me, you know how this works. That's racism on every level. But we black, man, we can rise above this. So when they got through eating me up, me and Blue went up there. The first one they're going to open is a Vision Center in Detroit. It's going to take a school that was closed, reopen it with HUD funding. Going to support it with the right type of counselors and stuff, and create a place for young boys and girls to come and to learn life skills. See, what our kids don't know how to do is dream. If you destroy the dream, the Bible says a man without a dream or vision shall perish. It never mentions if you don't have an education. I mean, congratulations if you got one. It's so helpful in a lot of things. But we got to get our kids to dream it. Then we got to educate their parents on financial literacy. We got to teach them life skills.
Stay tuned. There's so much more in store. Just make